Reichman University.
מה, את פריירית?
נאה.
ממש לא.
Confessions of two reformed פריירים. Showing you the chutzpah needed to survive with my beanie and Becky Sasson.
Welcome back to the Confessions of Two Reformed Frariot, and you're here with Mai today. So today I'll be doing a solo special kind of thing because Becky has some important things to get done, and it was very important for me to have this episode done with our actually very special guest, which I'll be introducing now. She's been with me since I made Aliyah, and she's very, very important to me. So I'll be introducing Tali now. Hi, Tali.
Hey, what's up?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to see you.
I'm glad to see you, too. So I haven't seen Tali in like a month because Tali flew home. So how was home, Tali? And where is home?
Home is the United States of America.
Ooh. Big name.
I know. Well, you know. I just got back from America. My parents live in Seattle and I go to visit them when I can. My little brother, too. And I just got back. So I'm glad to be back in Israel.
Amazing. How was the flight back?
Way too long.
Yeah.
I flew in from Los Angeles. It was like 14 hours.
What? Like you have to fly from Seattle to Los Angeles? How long was that?
That was about 2 hours and then 13 and a half, 14 hours.
I always forget the size of the United States is actually insane. Like you have to fly between places. Like sometimes I can't grasp it.
We honestly can't either.
It's crazy. So how long was it from LA to here?
From LA to here is 13 and a half hours. Yeah.
Oh my God. How was it?
A lot of movies.
It was a good
What movies did you watch?
Oh, I watched The Grand Budapest Hotel for like the sixth time.
It's yeah. What is it about? I don't know. Heard of that.
It's Wes Anderson.
Okay.
You know, the director.
Yes.
It's about a hotel and the hijinks that ensue. It's great.
Okay. So you recommend it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Tali recommends it. You too. Okay. So Tali, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So where are you from originally?
Okay. So my parents are Israeli, but they're not wholly Israeli. They actually made Aliyah from Ukraine, what was formerly the Soviet Union at the time, when they were young. Not together, separately. And they actually met in Israel, fell in love in Israel. So they kind of grew up or had their most significant points of their lives in Israel.
Okay.
And then they started moving all over the place. My dad was relocating, having lots of different jobs in different countries. Mm-hmm. So I actually ended up being born in Japan. I'm not
insane.
Japanese.
I and it says that like on your ID, right?
It does. And people always laugh. And the people at the, like when you have the security at Ben Gurion Airport, they always look at it and they're like, are you lying? Is this a fake?
Oh my
and
God.
I'm like, no.
And we know that security at Ben Gurion Airport is actually crazy. Like they check everything and anything.
Yeah. So I just try to make a joke about it. And then they're like, okay, she's not too suspicious.
Her eyes are kind of slanted.
It's crazy.
So yeah, so I ended up being born there, but I didn't, I wasn't lucky enough to grow up there. And my parents moved back, well, not back, but for the first time moved to the U.S. Mm-hmm. when I was about a year old. So I ended up growing up there for pretty much most of the rest of my life.
Okay.
I graduated high school there. I was mostly in New Jersey, but I ended up graduating in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So lots of moving around, lots of different places, different, you know, communities and people.
Mm-hmm.
But my heart always felt really, really connected to Israel. And my identity was very much Israeli growing up. That's how my parents raised me. So it felt very natural. And I kind of knew from a young age that I wanted to come to Israel, make Aliyah, do the army and all that good stuff. And I did it. So
amazing.
Here I am.
And how did you make Aliyah? What was that process like for you?
So I made Aliyah the same way that Mai did. If people from previous episodes know.
They should know. They should be listening to all our episodes.
Take notes, people. So I did Garin Tzabar, which is a really great program, I think from the Tzofim, right?
Yes.
Where they have lots of groups of young Jewish people from all over the world who want to make Aliyah, who want to be lone soldiers, and who don't want to do it alone. So we kind of get put into groups. And I was put into Mai's group, which is like, obviously, you know,
obviously
the best. And we lived on a kibbutz for a while. They helped us with all the bureaucracy and all the craziness of moving to Israel and, you know, everything that comes with it. And so also we also like when we what is the word? Drafted to the army.
Yes.
I was going to say
Lydia. It's fine. Yes. If there's like a Hebrew word that comes, we just need to translate it for all our not Hebrew speakers.
No problem. So Lydia, yes, or draft.
Drafted.
To the army was also with the help of Garin Tzabal.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they helped us with so much. It was really great.
They did. We had a really good time.
It was fun.
It was an interesting time. It was like, why am I here with all these cows? The first time that I got there.
It was a smelly kibbutz.
It was, yeah. I remember just like leaving our rooms and just look out, just like taking that like deep breath of fresh cow
dung
manure.
They were maneuvering something, that's for sure.
I'm dead. Okay. I'm sorry, manure. I'm sorry. This whole English Hebrew bilingual thing, which
we'll get into it.
We'll be talking about is really difficult. So don't judge me. Okay. Yes. And then you drafted to what? What was your role in the army?
I was in the Navy, actually. Go Navy. Mm-hmm. And I was a what's called a bakashit, which basically means I was like the eyes and ears of the
Of the sea space
that is,
sounds like a pirate.
Israel's maritime territory is the correct term.
So fancy,
right? Yeah, and I had a lot of like radars and infrared, mm-hmm. ultraviolet. Never mind.
It's a whole mix of violet red.
Yeah. Things. I had infrared cameras and I had like a huge what's it called? Not a telescope.
I was about to say telescope, but
not a telescope. Just a like a like huge a magnifying thing.
Okay.
That I would literally look out like a pirate, like a scout out
that's
on the sea.
Insane.
Yeah. So I would be doing the shifts, mm-hmm. and I was there for 2 years.
Amazing.
It was a fun time.
And how was your experience as a lone soldier in the army? If we're already getting into it.
Yeah. I mean, it was not easy. That's mm-hmm. for sure. There were a lot of phone calls to my parents where I was crying. But my mom always likes to tell the story too, where she was like, you know, I'd be crying, calling her on the phone, complaining about everything, telling her how hard it is. And she'd be like, you know, Tali, you don't have to stay there. You can, if it's too hard, come home. It's fine. You tried your best. And then I said, Mom, are you kidding me? Let me complain. Let me vent. It's fine. I'll
reverse
finish.
Psychology. It feels like reverse psychology.
Yeah, but you have to let it. You have to let the anger and, you know, frustration and sadness and all that stuff out. But it's a really
I'm, like,
important
thinking about it. That's actually so funny because that also happened to me with my parents. I was like, okay, you know, if it's so bad for you, like, let's get you out of the situation. I was like, that's not what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me to be strong and suck it up because that's what you have to do. And it's amazing because that's pretty much the reason why I wanted to come to the army is because I knew that I had to get that like suck it up personality trait because I didn't have it growing up in America.
Yeah,
and I
grew up
it.
In a bubble. I had the same thing in Thailand.
Mm-hmm. So definitely I wanted to sort of like, you know, build a backbone. And I think that's I succeeded in doing that a little bit. But also just living in Israel, you kind of are forced to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was in the Navy and being a lone soldier there, I actually got a lot of help. Also, important to note, I'm not totally alone in Israel. I have a really, really great privilege and a really great advantage where my grandmother and my aunt and my uncle and my cousins and the whole, like, most of my family is in Israel. I really had a lot of support, you know, not even just like monetary or financial support, but just emotional support. And if I needed to, the kibbutz was too far, I could crash on my aunt's couch in Tel Aviv. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
And not a lot of people get to experience that. So I think being a lone soldier while after having grown up Israeli and, you know, every summer you come visit Israel to see the rest of your family, it's a very different experience to people who just came without knowing anything.
So what are the difficulties that come with that? Because like I also grew up like that and Becky also grew up like that. And most of the people that we bring on the show are more olim that don't actually have support here from their families and didn't grow up Israeli. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of challenges that come with the... You know, you come with like a certain thing that you thought of because you grew up with your parents and your parents were Israel for you. And then you came here and you were like, well,
yeah,
they lied. It's not all just like that. It's a bit different.
Definitely. No, for sure. I you know, even coming here, like, again, I came pretty much every summer. We were in Israel. We'd be with family. So we weren't staying in hotels and being tourists. You know, we did some of the touristy stuff, but it was mostly like, you know, sit at grandma's house, watch Russian television and just and eat borscht all day. Like, that was my experience. And there were actually a few summers that I even did camps, summer camps in Israel. So I did like at the Rimon School of Music and
oh, wow.
Yeah, there was a Tel Aviv University summer camp that I took part in. So I really felt like I was Israeli. I really, even in America, I was, you know, I kind of rejected the American identity or status or whatever.
Yes.
Because I felt different. I felt like I was foreign a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came to Israel to live, not to vacation.
Yeah.
I made Aliyah and I got an absolute shock. I got a slap to the face. I thought I was like one of the more Israeli girls in our garin or of the American people that kind of made Aliyah. Nuh-uh. We are not. We were not.
Well, actually,
what we
that's
thought.
So true. Mm-hmm. I had the exact same thing in Thailand. Like, people would ask me where I'm from. I'm like, I'm Israeli. But I'm Israeli in the sense that, like, my parents are Israeli, not me. But I always had that identity that I was Israeli. So when I came mm-hmm. here and people were like, where are you? Like, what are you? I was like, I'm Israeli, but I'm not Israeli.
Yeah.
It's this whole, like, conflict you have with your self-identity
mm-hmm.
and every type of ole has a different conflict with their self-identity.
Exactly.
It's insane when you think about it.
Yeah, and it's not easy to reconcile with, but I think especially, you know, when you make it to the army, because even when we did the Garin Sabar,
yeah,
we spent about 3 months on the kibbutz volunteering, yeah, learning Hebrew, doing all this stuff together. And so we're mostly there. Obviously, the people who live in the kibbutz are mostly Israeli. So we felt like we were in that environment already. But we weren't. We were still mostly speaking in English with one
yeah.
another. We were very kind of Americanized, I want to say, because our garin was mostly American.
We were Americanized.
And then you get to the army. And let me tell you, like, I don't know. I know you were a mashakitash, and I don't know what, you know, kind of people or like a community or population, I guess, that you were mm-hmm. exposed to there. But a lot of the people who go to be bakashiot, with my
role,
tafkid, it's difficult.
You're learning Hebrew and English here. It's
no,
great.
No, literally. most of them are just people from communities that I'd never encountered, you know? Because
yeah.
I, growing up, I knew a lot of, like, Russian Israelis, Ukrainian Israelis. I knew a few, I guess, like, Moroccan Israelis here and there, a couple of Yemenite Jews as well that were in our community. But it was, again, it was just such a different
a bubble.
Population.
It was
a bubble.
Really just a bubble.
And suddenly I'm meeting all these girls, like, from Nahariya and from, like, you know, Akko, and I've never come into contact with these people before. I was in shock.
Girl, you know I was in the north, remember? For a year
oh,
and a half.
Yeah.
I have encountered all these people too.
Mm-hmm. And so, again, like, I don't want to, you know, there's a lot of derogatory terms that people like to use for these populations, which I'm not going to use. But it was just very interesting. It, like, even in America, you know, the sort of popular girls in school or whatever,
yeah,
the people who are maybe a bit, like, lower class, there wasn't too much of a cultural difference. Maybe we just weren't like friends or something, but in Israel it's a completely different ball game. So I was really, really shocked, and I realized, oh my god, I don't know any of the slang. I thought I knew this. I don't know any of the slang. I don't know what they're talking about, the pop culture references, the songs, everything. So it was really getting slow. Even just the how to interact with one another, you know,
yeah,
what I mean? I
100%.
Remember feeling really lonely in the course, because I think the girls, if they were nice to me in the beginning, because I was like the, you know, I was the American.
The lone soldier.
The lone soldier.
Mm-hmm. Cute little thing.
Yeah. So in the beginning, I was that. And they were nice to me. And then the course started coming. You know, we started doing the course, and it
mm-hmm.
was a couple months long. And I remember feeling really lonely. And like, these girls weren't actually my friends, because we
yeah.
didn't find the right way to communicate.
Yeah, like common ground.
We couldn't find common ground.
Common ground is difficult to find.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, you gravitate more to those other olim and other lone soldiers that you find. Like, I honestly, in both the bases that I was at, did not have other lone soldiers. So
mm-hmm.
I had to make do with what I had. And not saying anything against them, I found really great Israeli friends, and I'm friends with them till today. But it was very, like, exactly what
yeah.
you're saying. It's so difficult, because, again, it was even double difficult for us, because we knew Hebrew. So it
right.
was like, oh, so these lone soldiers, a lot, think they know Hebrew and English?
Mm-hmm.
You know the dirty stares I used to get sometimes?
Oh,
this
yeah.
girl came up to me, and she was like, why are you faking your accent? And I was like, what? I was like, I don't
that's
even want
really,
this accent.
That's really what they think.
It's jealousy. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, obviously, right? No, stop.
It's
just
not
kidding.
That obvious. But if you think
obvious.
About it, like, these people, not just girls, these people, like, they don't understand where you came from. You know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
what? And there are people that are more, I don't know if to say cultured, but they were more exposed growing up
yeah.
to other people, other things. So it's they're more interested. It's more like, oh, wow, you speak English. Nice. And there's some people that look at you like you fell from the moon. Like, what are you?
Because they were in their own bubble of like nobody, you know, of mostly monolingual Hebrew speakers who probably almost never left Israel. And they really didn't feel a need to either. They almost never left their town. So seeing somebody like me, not only did they think that I was like, how do you say mitnaset? You know what I mean? Condescending
Yeah, basically condescending.
They thought that I was trying to show that I'm better than them just because.
Facts.
Because in Hebrew, you and me both, we don't really have a strong accent. Mm-hmm. And then if we forget a word or something and we want to switch it we want to say the word in English, then they just think we think that we're better than them and that we're trying to show our talent, our skill or whatever.
And it's not that. It's really us struggling with the language. And at that moment, when we get something wrong, it's embarrassing to us. Like, they don't see it because you're not going to be like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. But like, I think in my head, like I remember having job interviews before like my current job and going to these offices and like speaking in Hebrew. And then she would ask me a question or he would ask me a question and I couldn't remember the word. Mm. And I would say the word and I would literally like inside be like, oh my God, that's it. I'm not getting the job, you know? And it could seem to them that it's actually, oh, endearing, you know, it's okay. It's like, but to you, it's like really bad situation. So having Israelis kind of comment on it, it's not very nice.
No, definitely.
To have that.
I've even had in friend groups, you know, where I've met new people and outside of the army also, where maybe, you know, I don't come off as very American anymore. I've tried very hard to assimilate myself. You know, I think a lot of people try to, and then they won't know right off the bat that I am American and that I didn't grow up in Israel. And then when I don't know their pop culture references, or I keep, you know, filling in pauses with English words or something because I can't remember the Hebrew word, then they really just think that I'm some kind of, you know, like snobby, I don't know what, North Tel Aviv girl with tons of money who flies to I don't know.
Wait, this is when you're sitting with Olim friends or
with
Israeli friends?
Sorry, yeah, I should have mentioned. Okay. With Israeli friends where I'm with them and they don't know right off the bat that I'm American. And then, and I remember feeling alienated from them or that they think that I'm, you know, whatever. But you have to find your people who accept
that.
Who understand it.
And actually use it as a strength for themselves. Like,
absolutely.
Not that like we have superpowers, but like, if you already have a friend who knows English and can help you, like, use us, you know, not look down at us for it or be like, oh, who is this mitnaset condescending person?
And I think that really kind of ties into what I wanted to talk about today, which is what I study. I go to Tel Aviv University and I study linguistics and also East Asian studies, but linguistics is my main focus.
She's super cool.
Please stop.
That is such a cool degree. I've never met anybody who's like, yeah, linguistics.
Well, we know a few people, but it's fine. Anyways, point being that my friends who are in this degree with me, we're all language nerds. We're all grammar nerds. And we're all, you know, we've all done like every single Duolingo course open because just for the fun of it.
I hate Duolingo.
Why? It's the best.
It's not the best.
Well, okay. Did the owl come to your
house at night and threaten you?
Like,
no,
what?
Because I tried to study. I tried to learn Korean because I love Korean, but that's for another episode. I love Korean and I'm pretty sure it was teaching me how to say like, I want a pigeon or like,
oh, yeah, no.
Like, what are these things? I don't need to tell people I want pigeons.
Right. No, that
you
is
know what I mean. I feel like it's
absolutely
not useful.
It definitely teaches you a lot of weird sentences, and that's a big complaint that a lot of people have. But anyway, the thing with Duolingo is that it can't be used as the sole language learning thing. The research says that the best way to learn a language fully, a new language, is immersion. You just have to go to that place and you have to surround yourself with
people
who speak that language, watch the movies, listen to the music, really, you know, fully immerse yourself. So, but what I was going to say is that my friends who study with me, again, we're all language nerds, so not only do most of them speak very good English because they just kind of, that was important to them growing up, but also anytime I have a weird, you know, if I translate something wrong or I say something in Hebrew that's in like the grammatical form of an English sentence, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or I forget the word and I switch it in. So they actually really enjoy those little mistakes, I guess, but they're not even mistakes. They're just part of the complexities of having multiple languages in your head. And so we really get along and we really enjoy that. And we talk about that a lot. So it's important to find the people, not necessarily language nerds like me.
Yeah.
But people who accept that part of you, who understand it a little more, who are willing to learn and to laugh with you about it and to help teach you a little bit. And not just to think that you're like, you know, trying to be all snooty and you know,
yeah,
highbrow.
100%.
That's not what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe there are people like that.
A little bit.
It's not, but
mean,
it's not me and
who
my.
You are. Yeah, no. I mean, we would never be snooty.
Please.
Going from American to British to anything at this point.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I would just talk in a like posh British accent.
Like for a 40-minute podcast episode.
Yeah. What if I did that from the start and I didn't tell anybody? Okay. Anyway. But what I wanted to talk about was also just being bilingual, being multilingual, and how that kind of affects your brain and the difficulties of living in a country where even though we're fluent in Hebrew and we've spoken it since we're little, it's kind of hard to say that it's our native language. And also native language is kind of a strange term, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe it's the first language that we spoke in our house with our parents when we grew up, but the more frequently used language or the more advanced and I guess developed language that we studied all of our school years in is English for both of us.
Yeah.
So, and that's very relevant now in my studies because I study in Hebrew. And I did 12 years of school in an American school system where all of the, you know, we read Shakespeare and we read lots of like academic
things. Yeah, like literature. Proper literature. Yeah.
Literature.
No.
We read all these things in English. And my Hebrew was pretty much just like spoken at home or with family members or whatever. So I never grew up learning to read the Torah, right? That's what Israeli students learn. But it's not just that. It's also reading high level literature and reading poems and reading all these classic stories in Hebrew.
In a different language, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it really develops that advanced, you know, reading level or whatever. And we just don't have that. So it's a struggle to study in Hebrew, and it's a challenge that I've been working on a lot, and it does get better. But what is really funny, and that both Maya and I have noticed on ourselves, and if people listening to this podcast have probably noticed too, that a lot of times, even though we're speaking in our first language, our more developed, dominant language, we still will forget words in English and have to fill them in with Hebrew.
100%, but it's also, it depends on where you are at life at that point. Because like, I was also going to ask you, like, I had a job a year ago where I was only speaking in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody around me spoke English, literally. I don't know how I got this job or whatever. And I had to write in Hebrew, read in Hebrew, talk in Hebrew all the time. And when I spoke to you guys, like my Olim friends, that's the only time I would speak English. And I noticed in that year and a half, my English went down the drain. And I have good English. We have a high level of English. It's not even about like fluency. Like our grammar's pretty good. Our vocab's pretty good. Like we did literature.
Yeah.
We don't speak like slang.
No, we do.
But not in a really like. Do you get what I mean?
No, absolutely.
I don't explain it.
No. We have a high level.
We're literate.
Yes,
that you know, people understand us. So at that time, I remember speaking in English and forgetting words, the most basic words. And I started getting scared. I was like, all this time of me knowing English is just gone. Like, is that going to happen to us in the future if we end up staying here? Like, actually, I don't.
Okay, so
worrying.
The good news is that we're not going to lose our English. It's very, very rare that people are actually able to lose their native languages or their first dominant languages. And that really only happens in cases of like, you know, almost like me and you, where maybe we were speaking Hebrew at home and we spoke it solely Hebrew until we were maybe 5 years old. Then you start the school system and most of your day is in English, right?
Mm-hmm. So
that is the case. There's, for example, my little brother who grew up in the same house as I did with three languages or, you know, also Russian. He only speaks English because at one day when he started school, he just decided he doesn't want to anymore, doesn't want to speak his home languages anymore.
Really?
And just switched to English and forgot his native languages. So that is possible. That's something that's called language attrition.
Okay, interesting.
And the good news is that that's not going to happen to us at this stage in life.
Thank God.
But what does happen is more of a dulling of our native language, because it's very possible if you now went to like learn Korean, for example, and you studied really hard, you became fluent for a year and then you never used it again. that would go down the drain at some point. That's, yeah, you know, obviously, because it's not your native language. But the dulling of a native language when you're surrounded or immersed in a second or third or, you know, other language, that is a very common occurrence, something that we really experience in our lives. And this actually happens because your languages, the ones that you have in your head, the ones that you speak, they're not completely separate from one another.
Okay.
They're actually systems of sounds and grammars and structures and semantics and things like that that are interwoven. And they're not, it's not, you know, one day you wake up and you decide, oh, today I'm only speaking Hebrew or today I'm only speaking English. It's not an on and off button. It's that sometimes they're activated and sometimes they're like suppressed a little bit.
But how? So, like what determines when I'm active in a certain language and when I'm suppressed in a other language?
It usually depends on what environment you're in, right? So if you were at that job where everybody's speaking Hebrew, your work is in Hebrew, your customers are calling you in Hebrew, mm-hmm, everything you have to write is in Hebrew, your brain is really, really activating the Hebrew. But then still, you might write an email,
yeah,
and you're thinking, oh my God, what's that word? I can only remember it in English. You know, and it's really hard. Yeah. It'll be right on the tip of your tongue. So again, that's the kind of thing, is that you can look at an object, mm-hmm, for example, glasses, right? You look at the object and your brain activates both of the languages. You can say mishkafayim and glasses.
And glasses, yeah.
It just chooses which one based on the environment that you're in. So most of the time it gets it right.
That's insane.
Right? Because like you're in, you know, we're in an environment where we're speaking Hebrew. Mm-hmm. Even just now, I was thinking of the word. I was... how is it called?
Thought process? What's the word?
Whatever. I was about to say the word environment, and the thought of this concept of environment, it first came to me as sviva and environment at the same time, and I had to make the active choice to say environment and not sviva, which is maybe I use the word sviva more often. It's more frequent in my mm-hmm vocabulary, and I can kind of pick it out. It's called like a... lexical choice. And yeah, so these things happen all the time, and it's constantly your brain having to choose between these things, and it can be tiring. It can actually be tiring.
Super tiring. Super tiring. Yeah. Like, I teach English and I obviously love what I do, and sometimes when people ask me to like choose a word, not choose a word, wow, no, brain, they'll be like saying a sentence and then they'll be like, oh, what's that word? And I'm like, I know, and I can't even think of it in English, and I can't think of it in Hebrew,
yeah, mm-hmm,
and I'm just, like, stunned at the fact that, like, I can't think of it, and there will be some lessons where my brain is on fire. Mm-hmm. This person will, my student will be, like, saying, what's this, and I'll be, like, mm-hmm, you know, getting all these words out and translating, and it depends on the day, it depends on the environment, it depends what words, if it's something that I know, like, the topic that we're talking about is something that I know and something that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So... it's frustration. You get really frustrated.
It is frustrating because you're constantly having to make that choice. And because, you know, if we spoke, if it was just the random choice every time and we went with what was the first thing that your brain picked out, then we would be speaking in three languages at once,
yeah,
in one sentence, and nobody would understand us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think it's actually so, it's such a relief and so fun when I'm with my Olim friends,
yeah,
like with Mai and a few other friends who have the same background as us and who also speak very high level both Hebrew and English,
mm-hmm,
and we're able to get together and just whatever activated word comes out first, we,
yeah,
say it. And our words will be, like, our sentences will be English, Hebrew, whatever. And it's very relieving getting to talk like that and to be understood. And then the other person also says that back. Because think about it, there's a lot of words also, like, in our day-to-day lives, in our studies, in our work, whatever, things that are only words in one language, in Hebrew,
yeah,
and I can't immediately translate it. It would take me a long time to think of the word in English, mm-hmm, because I don't use it in English. I just don't think of it. So it's very, very nice to have this group of friends where you can just talk freely and whatever language comes out.
And nobody understands us. People, mm-hmm, actually, I'll never forget this. I think we were speaking, like, it was me, you, and like, it was five of us, and we were speaking, and this guy or girl came up to us like, what language are you speaking? And then we're looking at them, we're like, what do you mean, what language are we speaking? We were speaking English. And he's like, no, you weren't. And we didn't even notice that we were speaking so quickly and intertwining certain words that it must have just sounded like gibberish to somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that I can comprehend what you're saying is actually insane to me.
And isn't that amazing also that it's so seamless, that understanding of one another? Because it really is that interweaving of the different languages and the different systems. It all works together hand in hand. And the language that you use more often and more frequently is just going to be a little bit more dominant.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of really interesting studies that they do to show these and to prove these and to see what other sort of facets of the brain functions it affects.
Yeah.
But it's really something that we experience in our lives. And I think that the more you kind of assimilate into your area where you live, for example, Israel, and speaking Hebrew, it's really good to have high-level Hebrew, by the way, for like any other Olim Chadashim that are hearing this. New Olim Chadashim is... I don't know how much I have.
It's one thing.
Yeah, it's one thing. It's a really... I think it's a very huge advantage to have good Hebrew in Israel.
Yeah.
For all of the reasons that you guys have talked about previously on the show. But also just, it's good for your brain. It really is. Studies have shown that knowing more than one language and learning new languages also, it's really good for your brain. It keeps the elasticity active. It keeps you a little smart and a little sharper. But also, you're not going to lose your native language. It might be a little bit harder to talk with your friends back home because you're not going to have a word for the stuff you did in the army. But it's a privilege to be able to speak more than one language and to have friends who understand you when you make mistakes.
Yeah, so. I just think the environment that we're in needs to be more supportive.
Mm.
Like, in the sense that if we're here in Israel, so if you see an Olé, like I'm speaking to the Israelis now, like if you see an Olé that's trying to speak Hebrew and he has a very, very heavy accent, because that's how it's going to be at the start. Like, me and Tali have that privilege where our parents were very adamant and very strict on us at home. Like, my parents, no matter what we said in English, were speaking to us in Hebrew. Like,
but again, it's a blessing and a curse, because then you people expect you to have...
Yeah, that's a different everything that's else. A different problem, but we don't have such heavy American accents. We have it here and there, but it's not, what you see on TV when people are like making fun of Americans. But if somebody's trying to speak Hebrew and trying to order something at a restaurant and you're purposefully trying to speak to them in English because you hear that accent, first of all, rude.
Yeah.
Second of all, you don't know who this person is, okay? Not all Olim just came for the army and stuff. This man could be in a corporate. This man could be a big businessman. Like, treat Olim with the same respect as you would treat a person that knows Hebrew. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't do that. And I think that causes a very not harmonic interaction.
Yeah,
I forgot the word.
No, it becomes a little contentious even.
It's like a tense interaction sometimes. Like, again, it's not everybody, but I've had these interactions before when it's like, why are you being so adamant on something that's not even that important? Like, let me speak Hebrew. What's the problem?
Right. And I think there's also the stereotype, for example, about like French people, that they, if you have the most perfect French accent, they're still going to stop you and be like, no, just speak English.
Yeah,
please.
And how is a person supposed to learn?
Yeah, how are they supposed to learn? How are they supposed to communicate and be immersed in all that? So really just extend that same respect as you would. And also think about, like, this is the same argument that people make, by the way, for lots of people in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
who come to the U.S. from all over the world and have strong accents. And a lot of people, become very xenophobic and they're like, oh, that's such a stupid accent, whatever. The same advice goes here. The fact that they're making such a great effort to learn your language, to be a part of your country, to assimilate, to be part of the community is so great. And by the way, they probably know more languages than you do. So some respect, if they make a mistake, just smile and help them find the word and continue your conversation. And if it actually is a better experience for everybody.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. And same for like Olim, by the way. If an Israeli is really struggling to speak English, don't just laugh at them or think that they're stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing.
It's not.
It's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because they're putting in effort. Like, I'm speaking from experience that like so many Israelis want and put in effort to learn English because first of all, they maybe weren't raised in a community or environment that they had that opportunity to actually speak English, and it's not their fault. And they realize that they're very smart people, but they need English to get, to go forward and get promotions and
be in companies that they really, really want to be in.
Right.
So definitely not to judge any Israeli who's trying to speak English. So it definitely...
There's enough other stuff to judge people on.
Yeah. We're going through enough in this country right now.
Right.
But how do you think languages and us being bilingual or trilingual, can you say that? Trilingual.
You can say trilingual. Yeah. You can say I don't know.
Yeah. All the linguals. Anybody who has more than one language, more than one dominant language, because I think if you have... a dominant language and then a small one, it doesn't count.
Like all my little Duolingo courses.
Yeah, like knowing now like one word in Spanish. No, I'm talking about like 2, 3, 4 dominant languages.
Yeah.
How does that affect like our lives as Olim? Because like I know 100% it affects me. So I would love to hear how it's affected you and how you think it affects in general.
Well, I think first of all, it's a really great thing because it gives you the opportunity to connect with so many more people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a point of pride for a lot of people. That's why I went into studying language, because it's the thing that makes us human. It's beautiful. And being an Olé Chadash in this country, I mean, there's so many of us, first of all. And what's beautiful is that we all connect with Hebrew. You know, like I can be talking to somebody who grew up in South America or in Russia or in Thailand. And the language that we communicate in is Hebrew. It's this beautiful,
feels like home.
Ancient language that was revived in the 1800s and became a whole new thing with, you know, new accents and new slang and new everything. It's really cool. It's also, you know, it can be a little difficult, as we mentioned, with the bureaucracy being hard. I mean, listen, like if I want to rent an apartment and they give me the lease to sign, I have no idea what I'm reading there. It looks like gibberish because it's like very high level lawyer speak, which even a contract in English, I would barely be able to read because it's so the melel. How do you say melel?
The wording.
Yeah, the wording. There's just so much of it and it's very like verbose and everything. So that can make things a little difficult. There's a lot of, luckily these days, there are a lot of programs that help and there's a lot of ulpanim and everything. And actually my mom, who came to Israel when she was 16, and so, obviously until then she only knew Russian and a little bit of English that she learned in school. She came to Israel. She immediately was thrust into high school, having to speak only Hebrew, and then going to university right after that. She only had an option to study in Hebrew.
Yeah.
And she, she just remembers having such a difficult time and really having to struggle, way more than we do now with all of these like accessibility options that we have today.
Yeah, it's a different time.
And I remember I told her about this, program that I'm working in and something that kind of helps Olim Chadashim and gives a scholarship and also you get a counselor that helps you through. It's called Manigut Ol... Slicha, that's not what it's called. It's called... Aminal Studentim Olim. And I was telling her about all the different programs that it has and events and activities and ways that it can help students. And she was almost in tears just hearing about this, saying like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that these days you get so much help and that there's programs that are also specifically for Russian speakers from who made Aliyah from Russian speaking countries.
No, it's amazing. Like there's so much to go and to do more, but...
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure compared to what it was...
So things have really advanced and things have really kind of progressed in the way that more people, more, Jewish people who want to come to this country and who feel that this is their home, it just makes it a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, I think that the more programs like that and the more accessibility sort of things that we have, I mean, the better. So,
amazing.
Yeah.
So this show is called The Confessions of Two Reformed Frariot. So we are going to connect it to being a friar. So just a reminder for anybody who's new or doesn't know what a friar is a sucker. So Tali, can you maybe give our listeners at home some tips and tricks on how not to be a friar in general and also like linguistics wise?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, I think it's so important to learn slang. Okay, like I think that is one of your top ways to not be a frayer, because there were times where as a person who speaks Hebrew, who I'm fluent in Hebrew, I went to a job, I didn't know the slang, and people were like insulting me to my face. I had no idea. I had no clue.
Oh my God.
No, seriously, it's important. It also helps you connect more with the people. That's really the heart of the community of the language and everything. And don't get too hung up on having perfect grammar, perfect spelling, perfect all of that. Just the best that you could, try your best to really immerse yourself and to speak as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way not to be a file. Then people take you a little bit more seriously in this country when you have better Hebrew. And if somebody starts being annoying about if you have a heavy accent or something or other, you can start yelling at them in a very fast string of Hebrew curse words, and they will get right off your butt, because that's the way they do it in Israel. That's the
They'll look at you with respect in their eyes. They'll be like, they're one of us.
Exactly. But I think it's also important to kind of consider all of these different languages when you're, for example, like looking for a partner in life, or where you're going to live in your future, what kind of languages you want your future kids to have if you're considering having kids. These are all things that will affect their lives. And that, you know, if you only speak English, for example, for like Olim who come here and they only speak English in their house with their partner or with their future kids, whatever, their kids might one day really regret and really be upset that their parents didn't pass on those languages. So that can be something really special that that we should keep alive. And yeah, I don't know. That's all I got.
Amazing. That's enough. So thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
I felt like I learned so much, and I really hope that our listeners also really learned, because I think what you're studying is so unique, and maybe not a lot of people choose to do it, but it's definitely something that is amazing and people should look more into it. So thank you. I really appreciate it. And that's it. Thank you so much for listening. And in the meantime, don't forget, don't be a frayer.
Not frayerit.
Nah. Ma'amash lo.
Confessions of two reformed frayerit. Showing you the chutzpah needed to survive with my Beanie and Becky Sasson.